Hi, I'm Brett Dickerson. I've been through a lot of times in my life where I had to make decisions. Those decisions were not always the easiest. Well, I call those times intersections. I'm interested in those intersections that other people have had in their lives because I want to learn from that, and maybe you can too. I hope you enjoy today's podcast. I'm talking with Representative Cindy Munson, who recently won a special election for Oklahoma's House District 85, which takes in parts of northwestern Oklahoma City. We're going to hear about some intersections in Cindy's life that you might not be aware of. So I first met you when you were campaigning the first time against David Dank.
Yes.
And I've lived in that district for about 20 years this time, and really another, like a couple of living spaces before that, I was in House District 85. Mm-hmm. So I just by happenstance, I've been in that district a lot. So I met you. You were running against David Dank, and here's this lonesome individual out here knocking on doors, talking in the middle of the summertime. It's very hot, and so that's how we first met. And then for Red Dirt Report, I wrote a couple of stories about you. One during your campaign, and then the other one when you started your campaign up again. Yeah. It was like this big surprise. Okay, you thought that you were going to have some time to get ready to run again, and all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, this seat's open.
Yeah.
So you were a natural to run for it again. Now, that was this whole Intersections podcast, though, is not about politics and your political career, even though that's a part of the intersection. This has been a big intersection for you in your life,
yes.
Hasn't it?
Yes.
Can you talk about just about how big of an intersection this has been? I've been kind of following some of your things that you wrote on Facebook and things. Some people were not always nice to you,
yeah.
Were they? So you had, you know, it's kind of a personal thing when you're just out there by yourself knocking doors.
Yeah.
It can feel pretty personal. Yeah. They can't be talking to anybody else but you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Talk about what kind of a real personal intersection this campaign and this election has been for you.
So the question I always get is if politics has, if I've sort of been calculating this my whole life, right? And when I was in high school, I was really interested in government, specifically student government, and I was really active in student council, which led me to participate in a program called Girl State through the American Legion Auxiliary. And that's really where my eyes were open to state government, local government, and with the emphasis being on women and girls, you know, empowering young women to understand the process and to get involved really opened my eyes to everything. So that's probably where I got my first taste of politics and what it might be like to one day run for office. But that wasn't necessarily where I was interested in taking my life. Before I became an elected state representative, I worked in nonprofits. So I always knew that my career had to be something that would fill sort of my soul bank as opposed to my, you know, my checking account. And I chose the route of nonprofit because I really wanted my work to be purposeful, and I wanted to do something that I really believed in and that would motivate me to get up every day to, you know, feel like I was making a difference in my local community. So I started working for the Girl Scouts after I finished college and graduate school. And I specifically chose the track of outreach work because when you see the statistics that women and girls face in Oklahoma, you know, we're at the bottom of the list for everything good and at the top of the list for everything bad. I thought, you know, this is a personal passion of mine, not only because I'm a woman, but because I want more for the women in my community, especially young women who have grown up in places that they didn't ask to. So living in poverty or somehow have now been affected through the juvenile justice system, are affected by teen pregnancy or other challenges that sort of go on that, that I believe are our community issues.
Yeah. Now, average person walking down the street might think, Girl Scouts. Oh, yeah, those cute little green uniforms. Yeah. Oh, yeah, those cute little Girl Scouts. Oh, yeah, cookies. I love those cookies. Now you've just ticked off a bunch of really gritty human issues there that most people do not associate with the Girl Scouts.
Right.
The Girl Scouts want people to think that they're buying safe cookies and their children are safe in the Girl Scout. But so talk about how you really came to know about all of those really gritty issues like child molestation and homelessness and things like that.
It actually started when I was a senior in college. I was at the University of Central Oklahoma. I had just come home from a summer trip in D.C. I studied at Georgetown all summer, and I was also given an internship as a development intern with a very small nonprofit helping homeless women. It was a day shelter, so our job was to provide activities and food for women in the nation's capital. So I would get off the bus, I would turn right, and there was the Capitol building. I would turn left, and it was the community I was working in. And I chose that route because Cindy likes to choose routes that are tough. And this is just sort of my life. My dad always says that I have a burden and it's never going to go away, and it's to help those who can't help themselves. And so my eyes were really open to the nonprofit sector, homelessness. One of my tasks were to research homelessness in Oklahoma and the Oklahoma City metro area, which I was going to school at UCO in Edmond. And so I really felt sheltered from all of that. And but it really opened my eyes to the issues that Oklahoma was facing. And I met a woman who worked for the national organization, Girl Scouts of the USA. She was essentially a lobbyist. She worked around public policy for women and girls in the United States and worked alongside the Girl Scouts. And so that's where my eyes were open, that you could work for the Girl Scouts and do work with the Girl Scouts outside of cookies and camp and sort of your traditional Girl Scout programming that most of the community is very familiar with. And I don't know exactly when the national organization started working towards these groups of young women who were in these communities, but I know here in Oklahoma, I started that work in 2008 under a federal grant as a stipend volunteer. I was a leadership instructor at Emerson High School. So after my experience in D.C., when I came home, I was really bothered by what I was seeing through my work at that small shelter, and then comparing that to what was going on here in Oklahoma. I decided I wanted to get involved in women and girls issues, but I wanted to do it in a way that I was able to be personal with women and girls, that I could be a mentor or some type of positive resource. And so I landed a spot at Emerson. So I taught a leadership course every morning, Monday through Friday at 7:20. And I worked with girls, about 7 to 8 girls that were from all over the metro area, from Dell City, Midwest City, Oklahoma City, the South Side, the East Side. And that's where all of these sort of social issues really struck me, because growing up, I probably remembered a few girls that were pregnant while they were in high school, or there were different challenges that some of my peers were facing, but I didn't understand it, and not in a way that I felt, you know, that someone on the outside could make a difference. So I spent a semester working with these girls, building a relationship, helping them with their day-to-day homework and activities. And then while taking on my own courses, I was a senior, you know, I was on my way out to graduate from college, and I was really questioning. So that's probably the first intersection of life. You know, I was a political science student, and so I was questioning law school. Should I try and go to D.C. and work for an elected official?
Lobbying, you know, firm.
Yeah, yeah.
Doing research for a lobbying
right, firm.
Right,
what is, you know, there's always some type of natural progression, but I typically don't take the natural progression. So I decided to talk to some mentors at my university, and I just said, this is a burden on my heart. This is going on in our community. It's no longer a statistic to me anymore. These are now human beings and young women that I see every day. So how do I make a difference? How do I you know, be more impactful and use the education that I've had and the experience in my own life? And I decided to go on to graduate school at the University of Nebraska, where I studied leadership education with the hopes of working for the Girl Scout organization, either a local council or the national organization in some way.
Not law school.
No.
That's definitely not law school.
No, it's not law school. It's not working at the Capitol. But I went to the university and I toured and I talked to the chairman of my graduate program and I met some students and I told some of the other professors in the program what my ideas were. And so they said, you'd be a great fit. This is not anything that anyone has brought up so far. And so I spent all of my time in graduate school studying leadership, the discipline of leadership, and then how do we take some of these leadership models and how do we teach young women, specifically women who are facing major challenges and barriers in their life, women who have never talked about leadership or have ever experienced a leadership opportunity, how do we make these models fit? And so I continued volunteering for the Girl Scout organization, Lincoln, Nebraska. I was then hired on as a staff member, and I stayed probably for about 6 months. I was balancing a lot with graduate work and an assistantship and a full-time job, and I decided, you know, ultimately when I came to Nebraska to finish my degree, to get a degree, to get a master's degree, and to do something good, and so I stopped with my job at the Girl Scouts while I finished my research, and then I ultimately decided Oklahoma is where I need to be because this is where women and girls, you know, have less of an opportunity than any other state to really thrive and be the best that they can be. And so I decided to just browse the website with the Girl Scouts of Western Oklahoma, and I found a job, not exactly where I wanted to be, but I knew it'd get my foot in the door. And so I started working with traditional troop leaders in the beginning, and I really enjoyed it. It helped me get to know the troops and the community, and then sort of the volunteers who were really prominent in our organization. And then there were just moments where they needed help at Emerson, and I just stepped up to the plate and said, you all know my passion for that school, you know my passion for the girls there, and my experience, my background, and it was sort of a natural fit. And then there was a position that came open, and I immediately applied, mm-hmm. and I received the job, and I spent 5 years working around our programs, the grants that we received from the Department of Justice, mm-hmm. and some local private foundation grants that we received. And then we also received some agency money so that we could work with girls in juvenile justice and those in public school. So we were always, my job was always to work with girls who are at risk to enter the juvenile justice system. And that starts at kindergarten, you know?
So that really is a different Girl Scout organization.
Yeah.
Than most people, you know, certainly live in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Of course, those problems follow people everywhere.
Don't
they? It's not just like aren't just inner city problems, are they?
We worked with girls in rural areas who were in alternative education situations. Even when I was in Lincoln, Nebraska, I worked in the county juvenile center there. And so it's everywhere. And, you know, it's important that organizations like the Girl Scouts, the brand is well known and the program is really trustworthy. And so it's just important that we get into those communities. And that's where my passion is. I mean, that's my true passion, you know. No matter what, I will always do everything I can for women and girls in those situations. I also ended up having the opportunity to work with mothers who are incarcerated to teach them life skills so that they could, once they come back out into society, they're able to work and have a more healthy lifestyle and relationship with their children.
That's really a lot of experience. You've really done a lot of that mm-hmm. kind of work, haven't you? Really, that's, you know, as much as we've talked, you know, I'm hearing some new things mm-hmm. just right there. You've really done a lot of that kind mm-hmm. of work. did that help you when you were just knocking doors, going door to door?
Yes, because I think, you know, what what has been so unique about my experience is that I have a different background than most politicians or elected officials. You know, a lot of people come from law or business, and there are a few nonprofit professionals in the Oklahoma legislature, but working in nonprofit forces you to see the issues that our communities are facing. So I talked a lot about that with my now constituents about, you know, where I'm coming from about education, the things I've seen happen to girls and families, when a parent is incarcerated, and I have worked with families who live in public housing. And so I've really seen parents who have just fallen on hard times, and they have children, they have mouths to feed, but they're going to work every day. They're doing their best. You know, there's requirements that they have to fulfill in order to keep their housing. And so I tried to take those stories to the doors, because what's happening in maybe some of the smaller communities I was working with the Girl Scouts is not going to just stay there. It's going to spread if we're not careful about policies that we are advocating for and really focusing in on individuals and people in our community and focusing on areas that will advance our people. And education to me is key. And when I was working with the Girl Scouts, I was writing and helping to write numerous grants around ways that the Girl Scouts could step in and fill in the gap for schools that were losing science teachers, math teachers. You know, we were always the best remedy in the juvenile justice programs because we were working with girls as individuals, as people, and we were sort of this additional community resource that didn't cost a lot of money to come in and you know, provide some intervention and keep girls focused in school and keep them involved in their community, doing community service and preparing them for the future. Because at the end of the day, my job is to help prepare the future for young people who are in elementary school now. You know, my job will be to take care of what's happening currently, but at the end of the day, all the elected officials now, our job is to create a bright future for these young people. So when it's time for them to go to college and get jobs, there needs to be opportunity, and we're responsible for that.
Well, let me ask you about that unique background that mm-hmm. you bring to this, because really this is unique. Mm-hmm. You're right. It's a pretty easy transition for somebody to pause their law practice mm-hmm. While they run for public office mm-hmm. and maybe serve in public office, and then whenever they're term limited out, just go back to the law firm and just, you know, pick up pretty much where they left off. But in your case, you actually quit this job that there's probably a lot of competition for to run for office. Mm-hmm. Did you find talking to the political establishment, even the Democratic Party political establishment, did you find that there was some confusion there? Did you, you know, were there a lot of stunned silences when you first started approaching?
Yeah. People? Well, my first race in 2014, I worked full time, and I just went to work really early so I could leave early in the afternoon to start door knocking. And I worked throughout the weekend, and, you know, I still had a job, and, you know, performance requirements that I had to provide. And so, that lasted for about a year and a half. And then once the campaign ended, I went right back to work. I took a day off and then I went back to work, and, my position had changed a little bit. And so really what happened in that time, I was starting to question, you know, where my abilities were best fit. And when you run for office, you're challenged in so many ways that you grow and you start to see your own potential and what you're capable of. And so one of the reasons why I love door knocking is because I love people. I like being face to face. I like having conversations. I like finding a way to sort of take on the problems of other people and find a solution for that. And if I can't, then who can? You know, I try and bring other people on board. My decision to leave my job in 2015 started at the beginning of the year. I am a Christian, and so my faith is incredibly important to me. And this is probably one of the next biggest intersections of my life where I was really starting to question what I wanted to do. And I had already conceded to the fact that I might run in 2016. It just sort of depended on the political climate and if it was right timing, because I did enjoy campaigning and I enjoyed being out in my district, but I also wanted to be realistic with my time and my resources and my momentum. You know, you want a chance to win. You don't necessarily want to put yourself out there again to lose. And so I really started praying about what was next for my life and trying to find ways to be brave again with some of my own personal interests and how I can impact the community and how I could take my experience from running for office into another journey. So I prayed about it, and I really felt a call to leave Girl Scouts, and my last day was at the end of February, and I wanted to rest. I did apply for other positions and things like that, but I really didn't feel comfortable, and I didn't feel like that's what was next.
Mm-hmm. And, so you're outdoor knocking.
Yeah.
Now, let's just talk about those encounters, because the first time that I ever interviewed you, that was in October of 2014, mm-hmm. you said at that point that you'd already knocked completely through the district twice and you were about halfway through. Mm-hmm. So how many times did you circle the district knocking doors in that first campaign, and then how many times did you do that again in mm-hmm. this second campaign?
The first time I finished just about a fourth pass. So I was close to a fourth pass. The second time I went through five times.
Five times.
Yes.
That's seeing a lot of people, yeah. isn't it? And some of those people, from things that I was reading, mm-hmm. some of those people were not happy to see you.
Yeah.
While you haven't led with the fact that you were a Democrat, mm-hmm. you haven't denied it, mm-hmm. you didn't run as an independent, which you probably could have, you didn't run as an independent, mm-hmm. but your commitment was, yes, I'm a Democrat, but I'm running to represent everybody in this mm-hmm. district. So as you were out there, though, you ran across some people who were ideologically kind of opposed and mm-hmm. maybe even angry with you. What were the two top issues that people tended to agree with you on, mm-hmm. and the top two issues that people disagreed with yeah. you on?
Well, first, knocking on doors is always it's a very unique experience, and I do believe it takes a certain type of person to take on a task like that, mainly because you have to have, and I wasn't perfect at this in the beginning, because you have to learn how to, you know, when somebody, you know, sort of, I always just say pushes you off the doorstep, or they don't answer, or they slam the door in your face, you have to be able to brush that off and prepare to get to the next door immediately. And the next person.
So you have to release that.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to let it
go. Inside.
Yeah.
You got to let it go, yeah. release it.
Yeah.
That was then, this is now.
Yeah.
Meaning that was the last
that door.
Step.
Yeah. and there are different reasons why people come to the door upset or angry, or, you know, you never know what's going on. I'm interrupting people's lives. You know, I'm interrupting their daily life. And, I always have that understanding in my head, you know, some people are just really tied to their party affiliation. You know, they have this feeling of being close to their party, whether that's being a Democrat or a Republican, and they've never, you know, voted outside of the party line. And some people are just very committed to that, which is their choice. I come to the door with just asking for a chance to introduce myself, not necessarily to introduce my party or my ideas, but to introduce myself and who I am as a person, which is why I never led, you know, with the word Democrat on mail pieces and yard signs and things like that, because I think we're in a place now politically where it's going to start to be about the person and who voters can connect with. Mm-hmm. So yeah, when I would tell people that I was a Democratic candidate, I would get very interesting responses, but And it was hurtful, I think mainly because this is a local race. We live in the same community. Right. And had I, maybe if I were the Republican candidate or if I was just wasn't a Democrat, they would listen to me. And it was amazing to see the amount of people who would listen to me, and then I would tell them I was a Democrat and they would be disappointed, which is...
But some of them thought twice about it because... Mm-hmm. Because the numbers now that have come out from the election board, am I right in saying that the numbers show that very obviously a significant number of Republicans turned out and voted for you?
Yeah, and so that's part of the job is that I came to the door, you know, maybe a month ago, and you weren't very kind to me or weren't willing to listen. I'm trying again, you know, and I have to keep trying because I want to build a relationship.
So the five times really gave you an opportunity. Yeah. To do that, didn't it? Just keep coming back.
Yeah.
People might change their mind, right?
Well, and be a little more open to hearing you or, you know, maybe even start to generate some questions as they're getting closer to election day, which is what I started to experience. So some of the houses that it was a quick interaction, you know, take my walk card, let me say my name. You know, by the fourth or fifth time, they're actually inviting me in and saying, you know, I actually do have questions for you. And that was encouraging for me towards the end of the race because then that showed, you know, all of the door knocking that I had done was really beneficial and it was really working. And
you were connecting.
Yeah.
You were connecting with people.
And I think what has happened in society is that we have decided what we don't want to hear about and what we do want to hear. Think about social media and all the news channels. We can really filter out what we want to see and hear. You know, we don't have to, you know, listen to the other side if we really don't want to.
That's right. And we can just set up our own little ideological lanes and we just stay in those.
Yeah. And I know Democrats do this too. So it's not to beat up on Republicans or anything like that. But what I was trying to do personally was to show that no matter how many times you push me off the doorstep, I'm going to keep coming back because I want you to know how much I care and how much I really want to hear your views. Because on election day, if I get elected, I am not just a Democrat. I am the representative of House District 85. Right. So how do I push for issues or truly represent you or be a voice for Northwest Oklahoma City if I don't talk to you?
But you have stood for some issues that people may not be able to square with your Christian commitment. Mm-hmm. What some people believe to be Christian and the connected political ideology to that, that doesn't really square with all we square with you, does it? Talk about that some.
Yeah.
What are some aspects as a Christian that you stand up for that other people might say, I can't believe you're a Christian and you stand up for them?
Yeah.
And so, you probably heard that.
Yeah. Oh, I heard it.
Yeah, right here in Oklahoma City. Yeah, sure. You did, yeah.
And they're typically the social issues, you know, and I just, when you're on a doorstep and you're talking to somebody face to face, it's a lot easier to have dialogue and conversations. And so really my job was never to, or my goal was never to come and change your mind. My goal was really to highlight some of the issues that I think are most important in Oklahoma that leaders really have to start paying attention to and leaders have to start educating the community around, as opposed to some of these hot button social issues that divide Christians, that divide political parties, that divide families, that divide communities. And I always want to be the uniter. So I want to come in, you know, yes, I may have a different perspective or a different stance on certain issues, but you know, that doesn't change my faith and it doesn't change what I believe about God. And
so is your faith in spite of those ideologies or do those ideologies really mesh with your Christianity?
They mesh. In my opinion, they mesh because I always want to stand on the side of love and the individual and, you know,
the embrace.
Yes. And some of the issues that people really get upset about specifically around marriage equality and, abortion, to me personally, those are not legislative issues. These are heart issues. These are issues that, you know, really, you know, need to be taken care of on a personal basis. And that's probably where I get the most frustrated. And, you know, we spend a lot of time arguing around some issues that are already, I don't want to say they're a waste of time, but they are, we're just spending a lot of time battling something that isn't going to be beat down. You know, people have a right to marry who they want, and women have a right to choose. And
but some people think the government should make sure that they don't.
Right, right. And I always want to make clear that I listen to both sides, because I get where both sides are coming from, and I get why people can be really uncomfortable with the fact that I am a believer and I have these social stances. But really, you know, for me, specifically around the issue of abortion, I want to see abortions ended, and I want to see where we can do proactive things to keep abortions from happening. And I do think that that's a responsibility that we have as a community to start figuring out those solutions. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the issues that the functions of government that we have got to focus on and be better around are education. If we want more jobs in our state, if we want people working and making high wages and being able to take care of themselves and their families, they must be educated. They must have a high school diploma. They have to have access to college or career tech or some type of post-secondary educational opportunity so that they can take care of themselves. And so that is one issue that Republicans and Democrats can really rally around. We may come at it a little differently, but ultimately we want to see all people thrive, and we want to see them take care of themselves.
Great. Yeah, great, great. Yeah. Why don't we kind of shift gears a little bit here? Mm-hmm. Let's kind of move back. I know policy is really on the forefront of your mind right now. and I'm sure we're going to hear more and more about that. Mm-hmm. My interest here is where Sandy Munson comes from.
Yeah.
And backing up even before college, I have seen your father around a lot.
Yes.
At campaign events. You're very close to your father. Your father's a really, I have met him and talked to him. I'm impressed with him too. He's a great dad. Mm-hmm. He's a very supportive dad. Mm-hmm. And one of the kind of becoming iconic photographs from the watch party was, you know, you burying your head in his chest and tissue in hand. That really will become kind of an iconic photograph, I think. And so even people not that close to the campaign know that you're very close to your father. Mm-hmm. Anybody who is curious, though, is going to ask, where's your mother?
Yeah. Yeah. So when I was about 13, my parents divorced. And my mother and I we have a better relationship now probably than we ever have. But my sister and I and my dad, my sister is 5 years younger than me, so you'll see her in pictures too. we grew up in a lot of domestic violence. And so that's an issue that's near and dear to my heart, and probably where a lot of my want or desire to help young women exists, or where it comes from, because I grew up in a home where a mother was not available or not there. And because I wasn't close to her because there was a lot of physical and verbal abuse going on, specifically towards me and then towards my father. My sister was young enough.
So your mother was the abuser.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Understanding that people change and that she may not be that now, but we're talking about your childhood. Mm-hmm. And so your mother was the aggressor there, which kind of turns everything on its head, you know, which is another way that Cindy Munson turns a lot of stereotypes on their head.
Yeah.
So your mother was the aggressor in that domestic violence situation.
Yeah. So, growing up was difficult. I was always walking on eggshells. I wanted to be perfect. A lot of questioning as to, you know, why I'm not good enough, or what do I need to do to be better, to be more loved, and always sort of lived this straight-lined life, you know, so that I wouldn't make anyone upset. But ultimately, my parents did decide to divorce, and my dad took full custody of my sister and I because it would be a safer environment, and quite frankly, that's where I wanted to be. And my dad was in the military, so my parents met while my dad was stationed in South Korea. So my mother is Korean. She was born in Seoul, South Korea, and then my dad's from Cincinnati, Ohio. So my mom still lives in Lawton, and I do think she keeps up a little bit, but you know, really being raised by a single parent is an interesting journey, but being raised by a single dad is even more interesting because, especially raising two girls on his own, he really had to step into some spaces that maybe, you know, most men aren't comfortable doing, emotionally, you know, and then just some of the growing pains that young women go through, especially throughout junior high and high school. But my dad is such a strong person, and my dad grew up poor, and, you know, they didn't have a lot, and there was not always, a plan to go to college or anything like that, which is why I chose the military. But yeah, I certainly wish that my mom could be on this journey a little bit more closely, but, you know, it's just hard to invite her into some places because I'm still very vulnerable. And,
So when you encountered, when you were doing your work through the Girl Scouts, mm-hmm. and you heard that story, mm-hmm. that really, you know, you recognized mm-hmm. those emotions, yeah. didn't you? You know, you've yeah. known those yourself.
Yeah. Well, and especially young women who are being raised by a single parent, whether that's a mom, you know, even if it's just their mother, or very rarely did I work with girls who had a single father raising them, but I felt the pain of only having one parent, and felt the pain of maybe sometimes having an absent mother. Mm-hmm. But it also helped me because I knew that through my pain, I was able to give back to young women, that they would have a champion for them always. You know, every girl I've worked with has a champion in me.
Was that divorce, was your mother and father finally not living and trying to mm-hmm. live in the same house together? Mm-hmm. Talk about what kind of an intersection yeah. that
yeah.
was.
Yeah, so that that changed a lot in family dynamics because I was no longer just the oldest daughter. You know, now I was sort of helping my dad take care of my sister and take on more duties at home. So, you know, we always joke that we are the three amigos, my sister, my dad, and I. and we are a family. My dad is definitely the parental unit, but, you know, we are a team. And when one person is weak, then that means the rest of us need to be stronger. So there's always been this balance of, you know, where we see that somebody is, you know, struggling with something. You know, families go through lots of different things. And so we have to step up to the plate. And that, so that required my sister and I to step up at times that we didn't always want to and, or were ready for. So when people tell me, you know, you're so young, I am young. I'm 30, which is young, but there are some life circumstances I've really had to deal with that a lot of 30-year-olds have not. And so, you know, even throughout the campaign, my dad and my sister have always been sort of this source of strength for me. And my sister believes in me like, no one has a sister like I do. She believes in me so much. She's so proud. I think she's still on the high that I won more than I am. And my dad is just this amazing champion. You know, I could be doing anything and he would still be on the front row. And
let me ask you about your dad there.
Yeah.
From that point where your mom moved out, mm-hmm. it's just the three of you instead of the four of you. Mm-hmm. Do you think that those, let me just ask you, did that experience of really working as a functioning family mm-hmm. with dad
yeah.
there, instead of mom. A lot of families revolve around mom and dad, mm-hmm. maybe kind of comes into that orbit every right. now and then, kind of like an asteroid going yeah. through, you know. And but your dad was the parent. How did that affect? Do you think that had any kind of effect, maybe in a positive way, for your ability to work with men?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. So, well, first, I think, you know,
because in politics,
yeah, I'll be working with a lot of men. Yeah.
A lot of powerful yeah. men too. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, one thing is that I am so grateful for is that having a dad who believes in you really helps in your confidence. So I remember going to college and, I had a classmate say, you know, I always wonder what your parents are like. Your mom must be this really strong mom. You know, not that my mom isn't strong, but I always, you know, tell them, well, I was actually raised by my dad. And everyone's always really shocked by that. but having a dad who truly believes in you and champions you is a very unique place to be as a young woman. And so so I think that's just prepared me for everything. I mean, really knowing that my dad loves me unconditionally and he's always there for me really does help. Yes, growing up and being raised by a man certainly helps prepare you to be around other men. And these are funny things, but sports, you know, always going to baseball games and watching football. And my dad is a big sports guy and loves the Cincinnati Reds, of course, mm-hmm. and the Bengals. And mm-hmm. And sorry, Oklahoma, but Ohio State, the Ohio State. And so... So yeah, I think I have a way of joking around and not taking things too seriously. But, you know, I also, even towards my dad, you know, there are some times where I have to stand up and say, Dad, that's, you know, that's not how we say things or how we do things. And, but
a man is somebody who you can work with,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh gosh. Yeah.
And it just strikes me how many young women I come across
mm-hmm.
who just don't get teaming with a man. Mm-hmm. They just have the hardest time
mm-hmm.
teaming with a man.
Yeah.
For you, that's really kind of flipped, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
Teaming with men is, you know, you yeah. teamed with dad.
Yeah.
Didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was kind of an intersection.
Mm-hmm.
What happened next after that? was high school graduation really much of an intersection, or was it like, okay, let's get this thing done so I can go on and do something really
yeah,
important?
No. I college was always in my future. We always talked about college in my family. My dad made education the top priority. And that's because he didn't have an opportunity to go to college. And so he wanted to make sure my sister and I at least obtain a bachelor's degree. Beyond that, he said, was 100% our choice. You know, anything that we want to do, he's going to stand behind us. And so I mentioned earlier, I was the student body president of my high school, which was a great honor. I was, by the way, the underdog in that race as well. So it's sort of fun thinking back. And at my swearing in, my high school government advisor and just a lifelong friend now was at the swearing in. So that was really great. And she came up to me at the reception and said, my little engine that could. And that's always been what she has whispered in my ear. So,
So you're used to being an underdog.
Mm-hmm.
In a political race.
Yeah, yeah. And just in life. You know, I've always had to find another way to do what it is that I want to do. And it's typically to help other people. And that, you know, that belief about life and what I want to do and the purpose of my life comes from my dad. I mean, my dad served the military, the United States, for 22 years. Mm-hmm. I watched him get up and put a uniform on and go to work every day mm-hmm. and come home and tell us stories of all the things he did before my sister and I were born and while he and my mother were married. And then, you know, just the things that he was able to do at Fort Sill growing up in Lawton. And my dad has always sort of keeps an eye out on who he can help. And that's really important to him. It's always been important in our lives. And so, you know, sort of our core values is to love each other and to educate ourselves and then make sure we're of service to our community in some way.
In the Army, a non-commissioned officer is expected to be a leader first. Command is somebody else's job, but lead, you know, the Army especially seems to be very clear about the difference between command and leadership, that the sergeants of varying levels are the leaders. They've been where the private is.
So now they know how to lead.
Did that help you having a leader like that in your family? Well, did you learn leadership?
Oh, gosh, yeah. My dad always he ranked pretty quickly throughout his time in the military. He retired as a master sergeant, as an E-8. And I remember going to his office when I was younger, and everyone would call him chief. And so I thought that was a huge deal. You know, I'd go back to school and, you know, I'd tell everyone, they call my dad chief. I don't know what that means, but yeah.
Very few people in the Army can be called chief.
And a lot of young men have looked up to my dad, and just, you know, in our family, you know, everybody gets down and does work. You know, there's no, because I'm the dad, kids do everything, or because I'm the oldest, you know, we've always been taught that if you don't ask of other people unless you do it yourself. And I have taken that in all of my leadership roles, all of my managing roles. And I think that's where you gain the most respect, because, you know, being a leader doesn't always mean being at the top. Being a leader means, you know, you have this unique opportunity to rally people around a vision or a goal, and hopefully it's to do something good.
Which is exactly what you've been trying to do in this campaign.
Yeah. And that's what I want to do throughout my term. You know, I know that right now 14 months is what I have, and how am I going to use those 14 months to show everyone that that I am going to work incredibly hard for them, and I'm going to work hard to unite our district, because it's important that we work together as a community. Within the district, there are small communities within the neighborhoods, and I see so much strength and so much opportunity around uniting with each other. And I do think that it's the state representative's job to keep that going, and the way to do that is to be out in the community talking to people and bringing different sides together and having dialogue. So that's important to me, and a lot of that comes from how I was brought up, and then also just being in school and work, where I have seen leaders not do things like that, and sometimes they're not just personal relationships. What we see in the media, what we see going on in the political environment now, people are really tired of all that.
Yeah. So what do people want? Now, you've knocked through the district in this campaign alone five times.
Yeah.
You've heard people talk a lot. What do people want now? What kind of change do people want?
People want true leadership. They want you standing on issues because you truly believe they're correct. And you're doing it for the greater good, not for political points, not for your next election or your next seat. They want to see those who are in the making of laws and who are working on public policy to be about the public. And that's tough, I think, for a lot of people, because think about all the shows that are out there, Scandal, House of Cards, all these shows that have sort of put a bad taste in your mouth for politics, although people keep watching them. So, you know, but, and I think that if whoever is listening, and if I had advice to give at this point early on in my political career, I would say if you want to be a candidate, you have to be about working hard and you have to be about the people. And you really must care about people, because this is hard work. I have not even started day one in, you know, fully in the Capitol in terms of being in session and all of that. But just being aware of what people's needs are. You can't meet everyone's need.
You now, know, normally anybody in House of Representatives is on a 2-year cycle, and generally you have to start that next campaign. You have about 1 year, and then you're starting a campaign again.
Yeah.
Okay. You have a shorter time than that.
Yes.
Don't you? roughly how much time do you have before you need to launch your next campaign?
It needs to be very soon. So, you know, a lot of times this is about
So you went from one intersection to another one, didn't you?
This is about the time that candidates start to announce that they're running for the next election cycle. Yeah. And we have a big presidential race coming up, of course. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so the good thing is I have one side of my life pretty much, you know, I know how it works. But then there's this whole other side that I have to, you know, get to know better and see how I'm
actually being a representative.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a unique place to be in, but I'm just mm-hmm. trusting that this is exactly where I'm supposed to be, and I'll work hard.
Tell me how this campaign and how being way out there in the public now after mm-hmm. your win, how has that affected your personal relationships?
Yeah. Well, my friends are all, you know, my personal friends are very excited and because they have walked alongside me, they've watched how hard I've worked, events, major events I've had to miss, because they know that I'm committed to what I'm doing and what I believe in. But in terms of, you know, reading articles and seeing videos and all of these different media pieces, I certainly read them. Or people will tell me about them, but I don't let them get into my head, because at the end of the day, there's still a ton of work to be done, and people are going to talk about this for however long they want, and I'm going to let them,
and they can say anything they want.
They want. Yep. And so, you know, my job is to keep my head in the district and keep my head in the work, and I can see where all of this can make you feel like somebody you're not. You know, I didn't run for office so I could, I think I saw in the Tulsa World today, put chills down Republican spines. You know, I didn't, yeah. You know,
I don't recall hearing you ever say
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And, you know, I have great respect for Democrats and Republicans and anybody who has any opinion on how we can make Oklahoma better for everyone. So yeah, all of this attention, the media attention that has happened around this campaign, I honestly had no idea it would be that that interesting to so many people, maybe in Oklahoma, specifically Oklahoma City, but not across the country. But it's also, I guess my favorite part of it all is that it's inspired young women and people to send me messages on Facebook. They've emailed me and said, you know, I've always thought about doing this, and so many people have told me no, and you have, so how do I do it? So, you know, that I probably take in more than anything. That makes me more excited. I had a young woman from Texas message me. I had someone from Nebraska. You know, we do have phone calls. My campaign team is getting phone calls from Minnesota, Arkansas, all over the country.
Now you do have a big intersection coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost an algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
The more, just politically, the more attention you get
mm-hmm.
as having won this district that no Democrat ever won, that's going to make that next race for the Republicans a really important race, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Yeah.
They're going to come after you, aren't
yeah.
they? Yeah. So you just thought it was tough hearing
right.
people talk to you on their front doorstep.
Right.
Now you're going to have a larger effort against you.
Right, right.
So how is your faith going to help you with
yeah.
that?
Yeah. You know, I have to trust that, you know, whatever is supposed to happen is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And for me, prayer is important, and also getting mentorship from my pastors. And we've already talked about ways, you know, that we can, you know, talk face to face at least once a week so that I can, you know, part of it is to stay grounded and true to myself and true to doing the right thing. Because I think anybody who is in any situation where they, you know, they don't want to get beat, you know, they'll find loopholes or ways to sort of make themselves better than what they are. But, you know, I don't want to play that kind of game. That's not really my heart and not something I'm interested in. And so, you know, I just have to prepare myself through prayer every day and stay focused on where I am. You know, this is, like I said, at this time and this part of life is exactly where I'm supposed to be. And that means starting my first term and also, well, half a term and then starting a new campaign. So,
and you know, hearing all of this, you are the same Cindy Munson that I interviewed back in 2014, mm-hmm. sitting in your living room.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hearing the same commitments that I heard back then.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wish you luck.
Thank
entering
you.
Entering the legislature. It's a tough thing, almost mm-hmm. kind of a blood sport.
Yeah.
And so, prayer and your pastor and all that
yeah.
will probably help you a lot.
Yeah.
Cindy, thank you very much. Again, I've been talking to Cindy Munson, who just won House District 85 seat in a special election. And you are going to be starting, taking your seat in the legislature coming up here in the wintertime
yes.
when the legislature reconvenes.
Yeah.
You just were sworn in. So thank you very much for talking with me today. This has been great.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That concludes the interview. Thank you for listening. This podcast idea came from taking a hard look at the many intersections in my life and listening to the intersections that other people talk about in their own lives. I want to hear about your intersections. My email address is ideas@intersectionsok.com. You can also communicate with me on Twitter and Instagram at intersectionsok. Also, take a look at the website at intersectionsok.com. Steven Tyler is the producer, and I am your host, Brett Dickerson.